In 1968, Maharaj took initiation from his Imanimes Srila Prabhupada at the age of 19. And in 1978, Maharaj took the renounced order of life, or sannyas. Maharaj is a co-founder for Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education. Maharaj also has served as director for Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. And Maharaj also has been the chief editor for Back to Godhead magazine. Maharaj has been traveling all around the world preaching. And in 1985-86, for a year and a half, Maharaj, along with a group of devotees, traveled across a number of states in India on foot. And they would stay in a village or a town every night, different village or a town every night. So we are very thankful and grateful that Maharaj is here. Let's again loudly welcome Maharaj by chanting Hari Bol.
Hari Bol!
As I said, someone has to manage the children. If they're becoming good, I don't want to have to be the one to tell the mothers.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari
Jaya
Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari
Jana Vallabha Giridhara Dhari
Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giridhara Dhari
Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giridhara Dhari
Jaya Gopi Jana
Prabha Jivara Khari
Sham Kunradha Kunigidi Govardhan ki jai, Vrindavan Tham ki jai, Vidit Tham ki jai, Jagannath Puri ki jai, Jagannamayi ki jai, Jagannamayi ki jai, Tulsi Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, Go Premanande.
This would probably help me more if we're over here. I guess, what do you do for a living? I guess this is good enough.
Anyway, it's all right.
Thank you all very much for coming today. If you could check your cell phones and make sure that they are silent, it would be much appreciated. It's just as easy to keep it here. Okay. It doesn't make a difference, because it doesn't make a difference. This is not that. Maybe let's keep it here. It was all right as it was.
Just
put that away. This can go to the side. If you want to use this table, you can put it here. That's it for furniture for this afternoon. Thank you. This is Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 3, text 33.
Sadrisham cheshtate svasya. Prakritir gyanavanapi Prakritim yanti bhutani Nigraham kim karishyati Sadrisham cheshtate svasya Prakritir gyanavanapi Prakritim yanti bhutani Nigraha kim karishyati.
Nigraha kim karishyati.
Sadrasham chaisa te sasya. Situated on the transcendental platform of Krishna consciousness, he cannot get free from the influence of the modes of material nature, as it is confirmed by the Lord in the 7th chapter, 7:14. Therefore, even for the most highly educated person on the mundane plane, it is impossible to get out of the entanglement of Maya, simply by theoretical knowledge, or by separating the soul from the body. There are many so-called spiritualists who outwardly pose as advanced in science, but inwardly or privately are completely under particular modes of nature which they are unable to surpass. Academically, one may be very learned, but because of his long association with material nature, he is in bondage. Krishna consciousness helps one to get out of the material entanglement, even though one may be engaged in his prescribed duties in terms of material existence. Therefore, without being fully in Krishna consciousness, one should not give up his occupational duties. No one should suddenly give up his prescribed duties and become a so-called yogi or transcendentalist artificially. It is better to be situated in one's position and try to attain Krishna consciousness under superior training. Thus one may be freed from the clutches of Krishna's Maya. Om Akram Timirandhasya Gananjana Shalakaya Shakshur Militam Dina Tasmai Shri Gurudeva Namaha Shri Chaitanya Prabhuistam Sthapitam Dina Bhutale Shayam Rupa Padavaikam Tathati Shavantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavanscha, Sri Rupam Shabrajatam, Shahagana Bhagavatam Vitam Stam Sarijinam, Shadvaitam Shabhatutam, Padishana Sahitam, Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Sri Radha Krishna Pada, Shahagana Bhagavatam, Sri Vishakam Vitam Stam, He Krishna Kanda Sindhav, Dina Bandho Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kantra, Tata Kantra Namostute, Tata Kanchana Gopangi, Radhe Vrinda Veshali, Vishamaru Sute Devi, Pranami Hari Priye, Pancha Kolpatarubhyascha, Kripa Sintho Vyayevacha, Patitanam Bhavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhara, Sri Vasadito Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Sadrisham Cheshtate Svasya Prakriter Gyanamanapi Prakritem Yanti Bhutani Nigraha Kim Krishuti. In this third chapter, Lord Krishna has been encouraging Arjuna to act in Krishna consciousness. For one who's not advanced in Krishna consciousness, simply giving up activities will be troublesome. Sannyasas tu mahabaho dukkamapto mayogataha. For one who's not fixed up in Krishna consciousness, simply renunciation is not the answer. That's Arjuna's proposal. Let me renounce the battle. Why should I engage in these horrible activities? But Krishna says no. These so-called horrible activities are your duty. As a kshatriya, you have to do it. And at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, if you don't follow my instruction and fight, if you think I'll run away, mityaisha, this is illusory. You'll be forced to do it by your own nature. You'll run away from the battlefield, but you'll come back and fight anyway, sooner or later, because that's your nature. You're a fighter. You're a fighter. So you won't be able to escape your nature simply by renouncing. Therefore, when Arjuna asked, which is better, to act or to give up activities for higher consciousness? Krishna said action is better. Karma yoga, action in Krishna consciousness, is better. It's practical and it's purifying. If we think I'll give up all activities, we may give them up, but the mind will not renounce. The mind will not renounce. We'll remain thinking of some material activities. And therefore, it's only external. And therefore, we'll go back to those activities. Prabhupada gave the example, there was one boy who came to Mayapur and he was going to chant 64 rounds a day. He built a little hut out in the fields at Mayapur, and now he's going to be like a Babaji and simply spend all of his time chanting. And he was there for like 4 days, and then he went away. It was a nice romantic thought, but the consciousness wasn't there. Without being advanced in Krishna consciousness,
simply to think, well, I'll be like Haridas Thakur with Hare Krishna.
So Krishna says it's better to act according to one's position. What is that? According to the modes of material nature that we've acquired, we have a particular duty to perform. As a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Those divisions are not officially observed, but still, someone has the nature of a scholar, someone has the nature of a manager or executive, someone has the nature of a farmer or a businessman, and someone has the nature of an ordinary worker. That's there, according to the bodies we've achieved, obtained, and the modes of nature associated with these bodies. Everyone has a particular nature. So rather than try to, just squeeze all of that out and make a pure vehicle in which the modes of nature are no longer evident, Krishna says, no, act according to your nature, but act for me. Then, by that activity, performed for the sake of me, in Krishna consciousness, your heart will be purified. And that's better than going off and becoming a meditator, going off and becoming a renouncer. That's better. So, Krishna says, Sadrase Cheshtate Sat Prakriter Jnanavanapi. Even a Jnani, a Jnanavan, a person who has knowledge, still acts according to his nature. The forces of nature are so powerful that even a person who knows this is what's going on still acts according to his nature. Prakriter Jnanavanapi. Even a learned person acts according to his nature. Prakritim Yanti Bhutani. And since everyone follows his nature, Nigraha Kim Purushati, what will be the use of trying to suppress it? What will repression accomplish deserves some comment. When Krishna spoke about 2,000 years before Sigmund Freud, Sigmund Freud had his ideas about psychology, about repression and so on, within the context of Freudian psychology, the idea is that if you have some urge and you simply try to keep it down, something will happen. I don't even know what Freud says. But in the popular version, what will happen is it'll build up and build up and build up until finally it explodes. So, Nigraha Kim Kurishati, people, they like this. What will repression accomplish? And in their minds, they translate it into the Nike philosophy. Just do it. Whatever it is, if you feel like doing it, just do it. Because if you deny yourself, if you're dishonest with yourself, if you deny your urges, then you'll go mad, you'll be a psychological wreck. The steam will build up until the boiler explodes. That's not what Krishna is saying. Krishna is not saying, whatever impulse you have, be sure not to check it, because that would be artificial. Not at all. And that philosophy is rather mad. If we actually... If we actually just put aside all suppression of desires and just did whatever we felt like doing, we just obeyed our impulses, I'd probably punch out 5 to 7 people a day. And who knows what else would happen? What would people do? No woman would be safe. No one would be safe. People would be blowing up government buildings, schools.
stabbing their wives or husbands on a regular basis, eating enormous quantities of everything people would be. The hospitals would be full of people dying from overdoses of ice cream. As a practical matter of survival, everyone has to check by their higher intelligence desires that are out of line. And Krishna, at the end of the chapter, in fact, so far from saying that one should just do it, he says just the opposite, that if one doesn't, that one should check one's desires from the very beginning. Tasmat tvam indriyanyado niyamya bharatarshi. One should control the senses from the very beginning before things get out of hand. Death, fire, and disease have to be dealt with right off the bat. Otherwise, debt becomes compound debt and switching credit cards and all of this. Disease becomes advanced, and fire takes over everything. But while it's still small, one should check it. Tasmat tvam indriyanyado niyamya bharatarshi. Papmanam prabhihihenam gyanabhigyananashin. One should control specifically lusty desires from the very beginning, because otherwise they become the destroyers of knowledge and self-realization. So Krishna's philosophy is just the opposite of the pop psych philosophy that whatever you feel like doing, you should just do it, because that's natural. When Krishna says everyone follows his nature, he doesn't mean that everyone should become an animal. Everyone should become known. What he means quite specifically in the context is that everyone has a particular duty to perform. Arjuna, if you say just, well, follow your nature, Arjuna's ready to go and leaving the battlefield. That's his impulse or his immediate desire. That's not what Krishna told him to do. Stay and fight. Why? It's your duty. Well, everyone has some particular duty to perform. Someone is a householder, he has one set of duties. Someone is a brahmacharya, sannyasi, he has another set of duties. Someone's a businessman, one set of duties. Someone's a philosopher or scholar, student, another set of duties. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, sthane stitas shrutigatam tanubandhanopi. One should stay in one's own position. No need running off, I'm going to become this, I'm going to become that. We can stay in our positions. And shrutigatam, we can hear about Krishna and purify our hearts. And tanubandhanopi, use our body, mind, and words in Krishna's service. And Bhagavad Gita is very practical. Everything, if we subtract Krishna, it becomes totally impractical. I was at one opening of a Hindu, no, not a Hindu, Indian student center in Gainesville, Florida. And there was a little ceremony for the opening. And the way it was arranged, they had a Christian boy speak, a Muslim boy speak, and a Hindu boy speak. Students, Indian students. So the three boys spoke, and the most confused boy was the Hindu boy. He was a graduate student, and he was trying to explain karmanye vadikaraste bhavapalish. So karmanye vadikaraste. Everyone has to work, everyone has the duty to work, but one shouldn't be interested in the results of the work. Mahapaleshu kudacha. And the poor boy had such a hard time explaining how you were going to work and not be interested in the results. Here's a grad student, totally focused on his graves, on his studies, on his graves, and he's tripping over his shoelaces trying to tell us how you shouldn't be attached to the results of your work. He's probably good at his studies, but he was terrible at trying to explain Bhagavad Gita. Because he left out Krishna. Ma Paleshu Kadachana doesn't mean I take the results of my work and I throw them in the air. Or I don't care about them. But I offer them to Krishna. That's Ma Paleshu Kadachana. Probably gave the example. You find a wallet sitting on the ground. If you pick it up and put it in your pocket, you're a thief. And if you just leave it there or throw it, you're a fool. But the real thing is to say, well, whose wallet is this? And return it to the owner. Oh, Krishna is Sarvaloka Maheshram. He's the owner of everything. Therefore, everything should be offered to Krishna. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, Manasa Deha Geha Yogi Chumor Arpilu Tvapade Nandakishore. My dear Nandakishore, Krishna, whatever I have, I offer to you. My mind, my body, my family life, Yogi Chumor, whatever I might have, I offer to you, Arpilu Tvapade Nandakishore. This is practical. What does it mean to offer to Krishna? Well, first it means that the deity is there and we offer him something. Patram pushpam palamatoyam yone patya priyachkiti. The most important thing is to offer Krishna our devotion. But the devotion is expressed by giving something. It doesn't have to be something big. Krishna says a fruit, a flower, a leaf, water. People won't do that. They won't take the botheration of offering something to Krishna. Not that they can't afford it, but the heart isn't there. Well, the first thing is to develop that mentality that Krishna is the source of everything and I should offer back to Krishna in gratitude. Something of what I've received. In India, you know, it's the process of bathing in the Ganges is to offer Ganges water into the Ganga, into the Ganges. So, what are you offering? The Ganges water just comes from the Ganges itself. The Ganges is not going to become enriched by your offering. But it's an acknowledgement that I'm bathing in the Ganges, this purifying water, and so I have to offer my gratitude. And where am I going to get anything to offer? So from the Ganges it's herself, I'll take something and offer. Her Prabhupada gave the example that the children are getting an allowance from their father, some money. And someone's buying candy, someone's buying this, someone. But one child thinks that, let me buy something for my father. Then the father is so pleased, oh, the child loves me. You know, bought a little necktie or bought something. It may not be a very expensive thing. But the real thing is that the child is appreciated. And my father is, so not just that the money is nice, but my father is nice. So let me give him something. When that devotion is there, then the father becomes pleased. Or when we offer something to Krishna in devotion, Krishna becomes pleased. Sarvaloka Maheshram, he owns literally everything. What can we give him more? But he's giving us everything we have, then if we think, let me offer something in gratitude to Krishna, we don't become the loser. The miser thinks, why should I give anything to Krishna? Krishna's doing is just a statue anyway, and he's just good with his rituals anyway. This is old fashioned. But the person who understands that Krishna is the source of my good fortune, And whatever I have, I should offer something to Krishna. He becomes spiritually enriched. Prahlad Maharaj gives the example that when you decorate your face, then the face in the mirror is automatically decorated. You don't have to separately decorate the face that you see in the mirror. So we're reflections of Krishna. If we glorify Krishna, we ourselves become glorious. And if we think, I'll keep everything for myself, we become inglorious. So, in the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Rupa Goswami recommends, we should give something. Actually, it's a regulative principle. Someone comes to the temple, he should give something to the deity. Doesn't matter, it may be a palm full of rice, it may be a couple of sticks of agarbatti, it may be $1 or $2. But one should offer something to Krishna. Just like Sudama Brahmana went to visit Krishna. And he was so poor, he didn't have anything. But his wife got a little bit of chipped rice, lowest quality rice, and he tied that up in a little bundle and brought it with him. Because if I'm going to see Krishna, I should give him a gift. It's etiquette also. Sometimes we go visit our family, relatives, or friends, and we bring them something, some flowers, some something, just to cultivate, express the relationship of friendship or love. We go to see our girlfriend, we bring her something. Or we come home from, you travel in the airports, you always see these shops with little gilt message. Daddy, did you bring me anything? And then the man thinks, yes, I should bring something for my child. And then the child is happy. Yes, my daddy brought me something. And there's a feeling of exchange, give and take. So one should bring something to the deity just to develop that feeling, to express that relationship. Or Srila Rupa Goswami says elsewhere, another principle is to give something that we're very fond of. Ooh, yeah. The things that we're very fond of are the things that we want to hold on to. But if we give something that we're very fond of, then that also is appreciated. You give your kind of leftover, bottom of the drawer stuff that you didn't want anyway. And it's understood. Krishna's in everyone's heart. He understands this person gave what he didn't care about anyway. But if we give something that's dear to us, then Krishna sees, oh, you've made some sacrifice. Nice. Or even if it's not the only thing, suppose there's something we know it's nice, it's dear to us that way, so then share with Krishna, give to Krishna something nice. The farmers, they'll give the first grains, the first produce from their gardens to Krishna. Just acknowledging that Krishna is the person. Even the shopkeepers in a little store sometimes in India, the first sale of the day, they'll give to the deity. They're in business to make money, it's understood. But the first sale, whatever it is, they'll give that to the deity. They'll have a little picture, they'll give that. Just that sense that actually I'm Krishna's servant. Actually I'm Krishna's servant. Or one up from that, Rupa Goswami, when he quit the government service, he gave half of everything he had for the service of the Lord and the Vaishnavas. The Prabhupada gives that as a standard. Just take your income and cut it in half and give half to the deity. So some householder wrote to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, you know, I can't do that. He said, give what you can. But that spirit, that I'm not in business for myself. It's not that the more my bottom line rises, And the more things I acquire, the more successful my life, and the more happy. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way at all. Otherwise, there are so many rich men who are miserable. And there are poor men who are happy. So the real happiness comes from being in our relationship with Krishna. Amapalesha Kadachana. We should work, but we should think that I'm Krishna's servant, so I'm working for Krishna. Manasa, my mind is for Krishna. My body belongs to Krishna. And my household life belongs to Krishna. My family members are meant for being engaged in the service of Krishna. I'm also meant for that. My house is meant for that. It's not my property. Temporarily, my house, my wife, my children, my business. But actually, it's all for Krishna. Well, one who works in that spirit, anashrita karma palam, karyam karma karoti, sa sanyasi triyotichya, na niradneva chakriya. In the sixth chapter, Krishna says that a person who works in that spirit, not taking shelter of the results of his work, not aspiring after that, but karyam karma karoti, working because it's his duty to work. I'm not intoxicated, I need to get more, but it's my duty to work. I may be very prosperous, I may be not so prosperous, that's up to Krishna. But it's my duty, not for sense gratification, but to satisfy Krishna. Anasaktasya Vishayan Yatarha Mupirinita. Nirvana Krishna Sambandha Yukta Vairagya Mukshita. But this is called detachment with while being connected to Krishna. Even in this material world, one who works in that spirit will always be free from entanglement. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave us this program centered around the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
All right, are there some questions?
You'll try it? Okay, try it.
Sometimes, like this verse, some devotees they read and they inquire then why some devotees leave their duties and join full time on Acharya.
That's also a duty. To why should one give up one's other activities and become a full-time brahmacharya? It's not that the only duty in life is to marry and have children, and that's one's absolute duty. If one can avoid that, that's fine. There's no place in Bhagavad Gita Krishna says you must marry. One must work, but not necessarily to support a wife and children. He may work to serve the deity. Work doesn't mean simply a job, but he must be engaged in practical activity for spreading Krishna consciousness, for serving the deity, or for family affairs. But if one can skip family affairs altogether, it saves a lot of time and money, doesn't it?
But in the same chapter, psychophysical nature.
Hmm.
So how do we know of psychophysical nature? Should we not?
How do we know what our psychophysical nature is? Well, to some extent, it's fairly evident. I could probably figure out without much guidance that I wasn't born to be a wrestler. Or a basketball player. You know, there's some things that just don't, we're physically not equipped for. So there's a certain body that we have. And it's suited for certain kinds of activity. And there's a certain kind of mind that we have. And it's also suited for a certain kind of activity. A person who's not, can't sit down and read a book is not going to be a scholar. And a person who can't stand, you know, just not interested in money is not going to be a businessman. A businessman is a person who sees money all over the place. Wherever he looks, turns his face, he sees how much something costs, how it could be gotten cheaper, how whether or not there might be a profit in such things. Businessman. A farmer has his nature. The ordinary worker. So to some extent we'll see, or those around us will see, or the spiritual master will see, the teacher will see. Guru means teacher. So the teacher should see. Even in ordinary life, usually the teacher will see. This boy is very good for studies. He should be on the fast track for college. This boy, you know, maybe he can learn mechanics and car fixing and, you know, trade. The teacher will see who's a studious boy, who's a simple boy. The teacher will see. And in the Vedic culture, that was quite systematic. They would see this boy's brahminical nature, this boy's Kshatriya nature, but generally we should be guided by the spiritual master. Otherwise, in practical terms, we can see. Yes?
Will this take a couple?
Yeah. Yeah.
If it's unentangled.
Bhakti Yoga means dedicating all our activities and whatever we do to Krishna. And Karma Yoga also means dedicating our activities or giving up the results to Krishna.
Mm.
What is the difference?
I couldn't follow. What was that?
Bhakti Yoga means
all our activities to Krishna, and Karma Yoga means essentially the same thing. So what's the difference? Okay.
The way Srila Prabhupada and previous acharyas are reading Karma Yoga here, Karma Yoga is essentially Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti in the advanced stage means pure love for Krishna. That's actually Bhakti. Bhakti means to serve Krishna in pure devotion. That's bhakti. Sarvopadi vidir muktam tat pratena nirmala. To be free from the bodily conception of life, to be pure, and to serve Krishna in pure consciousness is bhakti yoga. But I may not be yet advanced like that where I can simply serve Krishna out of advanced devotion. But I can begin by dedicating my work to Krishna. That's also counted as bhakti, because it's a component of bhakti. The way it can be analyzed this way, that karma, yoga, is offering one's karma to Krishna, one's at work to Krishna. Jnana yoga is not something separate from bhakti yoga. It's offering one's intelligence to Krishna, using one's intelligence for Krishna. So seen that way, both karma yoga and bhakti yoga, karma yoga and jnana yoga, can also be called bhakti yoga, because they're components of bhakti yoga. The beginning of a journey is also part of the journey.
Thank you, Mother, for giving that, that wonderful explanation. If Karma Yoga is also component, yes, definitely component of Bhakti Yoga, but Krishna says that culmination of knowledge is better than that, just not giving up the results of one's actions. But at the same time, it is explained that Bhavanam Janmanam Anti Jnanam. So if Jnana Yoga is better than Karma Yoga, then how come Jnana Yoga is speaking to Krishna from many lifetimes?
How come Jnana Yoga?
If Jnana Yoga is better than Karma Yoga, then how the Jnana Yoga maintains takes so long lifetimes before we serve come to Krishna?
Yeah, Jnani, Jnanavan, Mamrupa, means generally people are pursuing knowledge, not generally, some people are pursuing knowledge, pursuing knowledge, pursuing knowledge. When they actually get to the point of knowledge, then they surrender to Krishna. Vasudeva Sarvamita. Samahatma Sudhuru. Nidra Prabhupada discussed in the purport, there's so many jnanis, they're writing their doctoral theses and they're speculating like anything. But they're not surrendering to Krishna. So they're so-called jnanis. Or they're immature jnanis. But the jnani who's mature in knowledge surrenders to Krishna. So that means bhakti yoga. So the person who's using his intelligence in the service of Krishna, or the person who's come to the conclusion that Krishna is everything, he's now a bhakti yogi. He's a bhakti yogi, not simply a jnani. Otherwise, jnani. There's a karmi and there's a karma yogi. There's a jnani and there's a jnani yogi. Person who's simply working, he's not a yogi, he's an ass. People take it, they've read Bhagavad Gita, and you ask them, what is the message of Bhagavad Gita? Oh, do your work. Krishna's teaching, do your work. If that's the teaching, that one becomes a yogi or one becomes a advanced by simply doing work, then the ass is a great transcendentalist. Because he's working very hard. So, he's just a karmi, he's not a karmi yogi. Could you please turn off your cell phone? He's just a worker of a karmi. But karma yogi, he understands that I have to work to please Krishna. Or I have to work and offer the results of my work to Krishna. Now he's still engaged in karma, but the karma is connected. Yoga means connection. The karma is now connected with transcendence, with the Supreme, with Krishna, with God. Now he's a karma yogi. Again, he is speculating, he's interested in this, he's interested in that, he's trying to understand this, he's trying to understand that, he's trying to understand spiritual questions. But until he comes in connection with Krishna, until he's in the transcendental process, he's a jnani, he's a speculator. He's a person who's preoccupied with knowledge. But when he connects with Krishna, again, he becomes jnani yogi. Sometimes Prabhupada said the person who's still attached to karma, but connected with Krishna, is a karma yogi. So it means there's some covering of karma over the bhakti, or some mixture of attachment to karma in the bhakti. For the person engaged in jnana yoga, there's some attachment to speculation and intellectual something like that, which is mixed with this consciousness of Krishna. So that's karma mishra bhakti, jnana mishra bhakti, mixed devotional service. But when he becomes fully interested simply in pleasing Krishna, then that's pure bhakti yoga. So karma yoga, jnana yoga, then ultimately bhakti yoga.
Okay.
Shall we stop here? Thank you all very much.